At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1 while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hello again, my friends. I am Vivian McPeak, and this is Hemp Present. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for Hemp Present, email me at hemppresent@gmail.com. Ross Rebliati is a former professional Canadian snowboarder who won a gold medal in the men's giant slalom event at the 1998 Winter Olympics. The International Olympic Committee initially stripped him of the gold medal due to a failed drug test for the presence of cannabis, but that was overturned by an appeals court 2 days later, resulting in the medal being restored. Since retiring from snowboarding, Rebliati has become an entrepreneur in the cannabis industry, and he's joined me today to tell us more about it all. Welcome, Ross, to Cannabis Radio.
Thanks, Vivian. Good to be here.
Yeah, man. I've just been a fan of yours for so long. If I can do some more introduction and correct me if I get anything wrong, you were born in Vancouver, British Columbia, and you took up snowboarding at the age of 15. You won a Canadian and U.S. amateur snowboard championship in 1990, turned pro in 91. You won the Mount Baker Banked Slalom in 92, the U.S. Open in 1994, and the European Championship that same year. And in 96, you won the World Cup Supergiant Slalom in your hometown of Whistler, British Columbia. But you were just getting started. I want to cover your work in the cannabis industry and your product lines. But first, how did you get involved in snowboarding, and who were some of your influences as a teenager?
Sure. Yeah, thanks for the awesome introduction. Snowboarding back in 87 was the first year that I actually snowboarded, but it was a couple of years before that when a friend of mine had just moved over from France, and he had a snowboard, and I think that was like 85. And it got me thinking, because we were like skaters in Vancouver growing up. And, I had a subscription to Surfer Magazine, but we were landlocked in Vancouver and there's no wave. So, when snowboarding kind of hit the scene in, 85, 86, 87, I was thinking, that's how I'm going to, ride the wave and skateboard in the winter too. And so that's kind of was, the catalyst for it. And then a couple of my friends in the summer of 86 had gone down to visit their dad in Oregon, and they came back with boards. Like, it was like June, and I was looking at them, and next thing you know, I went and found one somewhere. This was like pre-snowboard shop, so I actually bought a snowboard secondhand out of a bike store, and just kind of stared at it in my room all summer long. And from then on, before I'd even started, I was addicted. So that was the beginning.
You became a gold medalist at the 1998 Winter Olympics, competing in the men's giant slalom event the same year that snowboarding was first introduced at the Olympics. Did you feel confident about winning the first gold medal in that category? And this is kind of a dumb question, but what did it feel like scoring such a historic victory for your country?
Right. Well, I guess that you could say I was as confident as, one could be going into the Olympics. It was our first run, at the Olympics. So we learned about it 4 years prior. And so it was the first time that we had an event to focus on that wasn't the following year. And so that in itself was a interesting thing. But I had won, like you said, I had multiple titles, European Championships, U.S. Open, multiple World Cup wins and podiums against those guys. And, you know, not, and then not to mention just leading up to the game, just to make a long story short, I got a fourth and a third over in Switzerland and Austria, literally 2 weeks before the Olympics. And so, yeah, I was coming in hot, as they say, feeling confident, you know,
kind of just another in a way, just another competition.
It was. And although it was that 4 year period, and since we weren't Olympians, you know, it wasn't part of our, you know, psyche at the time, you know, there was a lot of anxiety leading up to the Olympics for 4 years, mm-hmm. like just learning that we were going to go in 94, like we learned in 94 that we were going to go in 98. And so for those 4 years, the anxiety just built up. Like the pressure was huge. It was the first time snowboarding was at the Olympics. We wanted to represent the sport the best we could. Everybody had been, you know, like I personally dropped a couple of events on the World Cup Tour just to focus on the giant slalom discipline that I was going to be doing at the Olympics. And a lot of energy went into it. And of course, you know, I was using cannabis, you know, all throughout my career. But then leading up to the games, you know, they implemented the drug testing and everything. And so we basically, you know, adhere to that. Obviously, you know, the Olympics right. was our number one goal.
Sure.
But yeah.
So just 2 days after your gold medal win, the Olympic International Olympic Committee disqualified you because a drug test came back showing THC cannabis metabolites. But then you scored a second victory when an appeals court ruled in your favor, restoring your medal. And I mean, here you're, you know, a national hero, and then it gets taken away, and then it gets given back, and it only made you more famous and made you kind of a pot star as well. They were really ranking your chain. I mean, that must have been an emotional roller coaster for you.
Yeah, man, it was. I was, you know, riding high the day before. I won. I couldn't even, you know, as much as I thought I could win, winning was just unbelievable and was an amazing experience beyond words. But then learning the next morning that I had tested positive. So we kind of partied that night, you know, went to the award ceremonies.
Right, and, you're like, it's over.
Yeah, you know, my event was over. Nike was at the finish line, and they sponsored the Canadian team, and they came with me to the, you know, it was like a lot of good things were on the go. You know, I was 26 at the time, so the X Games was just getting started in 98, and I could see, you know, things coming together with sponsorship, etc. Of course, the Roots clothing company was, you know, there. And, but learning that I had tested positive for something the next morning was just like devastating. There was a bunch of people in my room at the hotel up at, Shigekogen, you know, just kind of checking out the gold medal. Like none of us had even seen medals in our lives before. And here I had a gold medal, and there's a bunch of people in the room, and the coaches came in and said, you know, everybody better clear out. And they looked at me and told me to sit down. And I just kind of had that, you know, deer in the headlights.
And you were innocent. You were innocent, right?
Yeah, no, 100%. So,
and the coach must have been all disappointed in you, right?
No. Snowboard culture. Yeah. Well, at the time, we didn't know what it was yet.
Right.
They just said I had tested positive. And they asked me if I had any idea what it could be. And I said, well, the only thing it could be would be weed, because that's the only thing that's on the list of banned substances that I'm anywhere near. So, as you mentioned, I went through the first appeal, and then I lost that just barely. And then I went through the second appeal, you know, in front of the tribunal, the IOC, like 35 members from all different countries. Like,
God, just you thought me. The pressure was over, but it was just starting.
It was just starting. And so we lost the first and second appeal, and then it went to the Court of Arbitration, where, you know, they assign like 3 or 5 lawyers or whatever it is to your case. And they just go over the rules and regulations basically and just see like where you fall into, you know, that realm. And it turned out that cannabis wasn't on the list of banned substances. So they were, they had no choice but to, you know, return my medal and reinstate me, which was the first time the IOC had ever given back a medal. So,
That's cool.
And then it just kind of got more intense after that, because when they awarded me back the medal, I was already in jail, in Nagano. And the representatives that were doing my drug test the day before or 2 days before in the finish line of the, you know, of the race, they, you know, when they found that I had tested positive for what was an illegal substance and still is to this day, cannabis, they reported it to the police and then they opened a file.
Man.
And so in between going to the court of arbitration and meeting with the lawyers, was at this really fancy wine and cheese party on the top of a building in Nagano, ran into the Prince of Monaco, Albert, who was, you know, in the bobsled. And they're like, oh, Russ, man, I can't believe this is happening to you.
So, Russ, hold that thought. Yeah. We have to go to a quick break, but this will be a good thing to return to. So we're going to take a quick break and come back right in just a second.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
We're back with Russ Rebliati. So gosh, finish that story, man. It was crazy.
Yeah, man. So I'm just meeting with the lawyers at this really fancy wine and cheese party, and I'm running into like some VIPs, like the Prince of Monaco, et cetera. I got, you know, everybody was like, oh, I can't believe this is happening. Cannabis shouldn't, you know, be anywhere near it, this list of banned substances and et cetera. And then, so I met with the lawyers in a room just off to the side, and they said, you know, it's looking good, right? Like, we can't see where it says cannabis is on the list of banned substances. It's not on the list. So, you know, we're feeling pretty good about it. So I came out of that there feeling good, but they hadn't, you know, presented this officially, and it wasn't no decision. So I left that. When I got to the lobby of this building, the hotel, you know, the cops were there, and you know, I had the Canadian Olympic Association representatives with me. I had a, you know, Royal Canadian Mounted Police officer, you know, assigned to me as well. And it was just like a mosh pit, like,
Jesus,
you know, like the Beatles, like people were on the hood of the car with, you know, big cameras. This was pre-digital, right? Pre-internet. So they had these giant cameras. They're sticking them through the window. There's like literally like 150, 200 reporters. It's like we couldn't even leave the station to follow the cops up, and they're just like, oh, we just have to interview you, and we opened a case, and yeah, just a formality. And crazy. The next thing you know, I'm in a jail cell, separated. God,
so talk about, you know, going from the ultimate high to the ultimate low,
right? In Asia, no less. And you know, I'd been to Japan probably 10 times leading up to that. We had a World Cup race there every year. You know, my first time there was in 88 for one of my sponsors back in the day. And so I had like a close personal relationship with Japan and a bunch of friends who are Japanese and everything. And it was common knowledge that you don't want to get in trouble, that cannabis is super prohibited. And, you know, we never mess with any of that. And so to find myself sitting in a cell being interrogated by the chief of police and through the interpreter, who didn't really speak English, you know, made it quite awkward. At one point, he was asking me through the interpreter, like, how I smoke weed. And so I was just, I didn't know really what the question was, but they were kind of like in the dark about it. They didn't know too much about it. So I grabbed one of his smokes that he had, and I broke it up onto the table and then rolled it back up in the paper. And his next question was, so people who smoke weed smoke tobacco? And I was just shaking my head, like, come on, buddy, like, put two and two together here. So it was at that point where I decided that I wasn't going to talk anymore. And they left me in there for probably like an hour, nobody around. Crazy. And then they came back and let me out and told me that the decision was made that I got to keep my medal and that they couldn't keep a gold medalist in jail. It would be too political. And yeah, and there's a picture of me holding up my medal on the internet when I got it back, wearing a black and green jacket. And that was on the front steps of the police station.
So you were you ended up being banned from entering the United States and put on the no-fly list, right, at totally bogus drug war action. Are you still banned from entering the U.S.?
Yeah, that was actually the no-fly list after 9/11.
They did that after 9/11 because of your cannabis?
Yeah. So in 2001, I was kind of red flagged after the Olympics as a known person associated to a Schedule I substance. And so yeah,
come to the United States. You're a danger of winning an Olympic gold medal.
So I have a paperwork now, and you're right. I'm still to this day prohibited to come to the States, but I have paperwork through lawyers now called advanced parole. And when I go across the line, I have to like basically turn myself in with the paperwork. And then they ask me like what it's for. And I have to like say what it's for, because they're cross-checking themselves anyway, it's just like a big hassle and kind of put a damper on my plans with my sponsorships with, you know, companies like Nike that disappeared after that happened, and going to the X Games and kind of
career. Derailed your career, right? But you turned around and you turned it into a career.
So at the time, it was like in 1998, California had already gone medical, and Canada was right there as well. And so my quest from that second that I realized this was a positive test for cannabis and that I was going to lose my medal was to get out in front of it and try to further the discussion on stigma and stereotype and legalization and the benefits. And, you know, I was the guy that went on NBC when Michael Phelps had his little encounter with the media and his bong as to why a pro athlete would, you know, use cannabis. And they had the anti-cannabis guy there saying that there's more cannabis users in rehab than any other substance.
Because judges have sent them there.
Oh, I know. An ultimatum that they have to choose jail time or rehab. Right. And that's what I said on NBC. And the guy just didn't have an answer for me. Anyways, I was the only guy that didn't have anything to lose to talk about cannabis at the time. You know, this is 25 years ago.
Right.
So, there's not a lot of athletes even to this day, other than a few UFC pioneers.
You know,
out there
I remember that. I remember that. And I was, you know, I was producing the Seattle Hemp Fest here, you know. And so, you know, we were just like, man, you were the man, you know. We're just like, yes.
It was intense.
You know, somebody who's using their celebrity to speak out against this insanity, man. So, you know, we were just all totally thrilled, man. Psyched, you know.
Amazing. So, good to hear. Yeah, no.
We got 3 minutes before the next break. Then we'll have our final segment. You talk to us about your cannabis business, man. What are you doing today?
Yeah, so Ross Gold Cannabis. You can go to rossgold.com or rossgoldcannabis.com and check it out. Same hashtag on Instagram. It's we're a craft, small batch, living soil, organic. We're a small company, but so we basically procure our cannabis from these craft growers, and we've got two strains out right now. One's Black Diamond, it's indica dominant, and the other one is organic Mango Gold, and it's a sativa dominant. These guys are like old school. they've been growing for way before Prohibition ended. And I even worked at the facility that does our Indica Black Diamond at Living Cannabis for a round. I did one round for them while they were in between growers. And so I've got these great relationships. This is how we get our product. The overhead of having your own facility and going through the licensing and the whole nine yards, as you know, we're federal. So we're on a completely different level as far as the expense and the security and all the reporting that needs to be done. In my case, I'm just branding and licensing, and I'm like hand selecting. I go to the grows. I look at the product. I grab it if it's great. And if it's not, you know, quadruple A, you know, we don't take it, but we've never had to turn anything down. Our growers are on point. We've got, let's see, right now we've got the two SKUs of pre-rolls, 3.5 gram pre-rolls. We've got the 3.5 gram bags of flower to go with it. We've got gold bags, you know, to carry the theme, the gold theme.
Right.
We got nice multi-packs. Yeah, lots of different things. Concentrates are coming down the line. And, you know, to be honest, we launched 12 years ago during Prohibition. And over that time, I had, you know, a Ross Gold dispensary back in 2015 here in BC, and got voted best dispensary a couple of times. So, yeah, we've, you know, been down the path of legalization, and now we're here.
Nice. We're going to take another quick break and come back with our final segment with Ross Revliati.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
We are back after that pause for the cause, because there's flaws in the laws with Ross Revliati. You were talking about your cannabis products. Are those available only in Canada?
Yeah, for now. Only in Canada for now. But we have been in talks with a group in Northern California, and we're looking at the EU as well. But first things first, we just got to, you know, we launched in February of this year, finally. And yeah, once we kind of get Canada under our thumb, we've got a couple more provinces that we're entering, Quebec and Ontario, in the next couple of months. Then we'll, you know, keep that going and then start looking at what we can do in the States. I've got some interest out of New York. I've got interest out of California, and we try to bring the both sides together and meet in the middle, and yeah, and then Europe. So yeah, I mean, the sky's the limit, really. But first things first, got everything figured out here at home, and then we're off to the races.
You know, I just have to say, back to your gold medal days, you were on the Tonight Show with Jay Leno, and you were lampooned on Saturday Night Live. You seem just so at ease and confident on national American television with Jay Leno. I mean, what was all that like for you, man?
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, Jay was a super cash guy, and really took care of me, flew me first class from Tokyo, literally out of the jail cell. I went to my hotel room after the cops came and searched my room and everything. And, my phone's ringing. I'm like, this is crazy. I haven't been here for 3 days. I don't feel like I literally was like at the end of my rope, right? Like I was just in jail. It was just traumatic. And I pick it up. It's my buddy. He wants me to, he knows the producer. The next thing you know, I'm on a first class flight to LA, Beverly Hilton. Porsche had a car for me out front. And it was just like insane, the transition from what I had just been through to that. And then being on the Tonight Show, like, don't forget, I've been like a pro snowboarder for 10 years and interviews and all
right,
that.
Right.
Especially in Europe, like not so much here, but in Europe, it was already bumping with, you know, and yeah. So I was more.
You had your chops.
Yeah. And I was like, I was literally shocked by the situation too. It was just unbelievable.
Wow. So I want to get this in while we still have a moment. As a member of the Make-A-Wish Foundation, you helped grant wishes of children as far away as Florida, and you worked with other charities, the Whistler Rotary Club, BC Sports Hall of Fame, Big Brothers of Greater Vancouver, Kids Help Phone, and the Whistler Blackcomb Foundation. Not everyone uses their celebrity status to make a difference in the lives of others, but you do. What is it that motivates you to take part in those activities and help?
Yeah,
help?
It's just like a way of giving back for all the support that I had when, you know, it wasn't necessarily something that people supported back in the day. And, just trying to make a little bit of a difference and also show that, you know, people, you know, the stigma on cannabis is you know, not correct. And that we're like everybody else. And we just want to give back to the communities that we're from. And also, you know, further away than that, there's disadvantaged people around the world that don't have the same opportunities. And in this day and age, man, with interest rates and inflation, like, let me tell you, if there's any disadvantage, it's crucial that there's support for these people. So that's my motivation.
Yeah, these are tough times, even for the cannabis industry. I know on the West Coast here, we have a bubble, cannabis bubble bursting, and high taxation and insane regulation. Right. And I mean, you know, the green rush has not as much of a rush, man. It doesn't feel like a rush for a lot of folks, man. It's kind of sobering. We only have about a minute and a half. Is that happening in Canada at all?
Yeah, there's a big consolidation happening after legalization at the federal level. There was a big ask to get into it in the first place. So that vetted a lot of people out just with the expense of the licensing and so forth. And now the dispensaries, there's a flood of dispensaries, and we're seeing like chains start buying up and growing and pushing out the smaller dispensaries. And so, yeah, there's a consolidation. Same thing happened in snowboarding in the 80s. There was tons of companies. And then by the late 90s, it was all consolidated down to like five major companies or something like that. You know, Burton, Sims, Morrow, Nitro, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
same thing's happening. It's a new industry in Canada. We're like 4 years old.
Well, you know, Ross Rebliotti at rossgoldcannabis.com. Thank you so much, man. It's just been so great talking to you, and you know, thanks for the contributions you've made. And I know you've been a hero to me and my friends for a long, long time, man.
That's awesome, Vivian. I appreciate being on, and peace.
All right. That concludes this installment of Hemp Present on Cannabis Radio. When it comes to prohibition, you've got the right not to remain silent. Activism requires a voice. So find your voice and speak up for justice, because resistance is fertile. The Hemp Present intro music is 7 Mile Beach by Joanne Rand. And the outro music is Take Back the Plant by Stickerbush. Stay strong, and we'll see you next time.
Marijuana!
The opinions expressed on this CannabisRadio.com program are those of the guests and hosts and do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of CannabisRadio.com. Any rebroadcast, republication, or retransmission of this program without proper consent is prohibited.